Let me, this is a continuation of the meeting that we held in the morning. Now we are going to receive the presentation from the two entities, which is NHBRC and HDA. So the HDA is led by the administrator, and the NHBRC, the board is still existing. I'm now going to allow the chair of NHBRC. To take us through. Chair, you're welcome.
In the meantime, while we're still waiting for, because I know I have a problem of network, just to remind members that you've already said so, Chair, in my opening remarks this morning, I explained the department has been affected by budget constraints. Again, in the morning, that issue came up strongly and questions came and they were answered, but I think Neville Train, as you know, that he is now the deputy director that has been deployed to the HDA, and he is going to do the presentation. And just to remind you again, honorable members, that the CEO, Mr. Osonge Zoboi, is the one responsible for NHBRC. I requested the DG that the problem that I'm faced with of a network, DG will come in. Thank you very much. You have a platform, DG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DM. Can we then have the chair or the CEO of NHBRC?
Ms. Julie Payash is in the meeting.
Oh yes, Julie. Thank you very much, Chair. Julie, please. In, Julie.
Ms. Julie, can you proceed? Do you have a problem of network?
No. Hello, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. I had muted myself. My apologies, Chairperson. May I just greet you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the DG, the DDG of the National Department, our Acting CEO and our Acting CFO of the NHBRC. Thank you, Chairperson, for inviting the NHBRC to this Portfolio Committee meeting, and it is our pleasure to be able to present to the committee on the NHBRC's budget, the strategic plans, as well as the revised annual performance plan for 2021-22. Chairperson, you will note that we have two executives who are here in their acting positions. This is because the NHBRC has with great sadness lost Mr. Mziwonke Hlabantu, our CEO, on the 24th of March this year. Chairperson and honorable members, while we at the NHBRC mourned our loss of our very dedicated and very capable CEO, we have to ensure that the business of the NHBRC have to proceed. And as a result, Council appointed Mr. Strong as a boy, who was our CFO, to act as our CEO until the position of the CEO has been filled. This process to undertake the filling of the post of the CEO has been initiated, Chairperson. If I can just indicate that Mr. Boy is a certified chartered accountant. He has been with the NHBRC for many years, and he is very knowledgeable about the business of the NHBRC. In fact, while Mr. Labanti was ill, and since Mr. Labanti's passing, Mr. Boy has been steering the NHBRC. At the move of the CFO necessitated that the position of the CFO at the NHBRC be filled, at least in the interim, and as a result, the deputy CFO, Ms. Tamlin Bauer, was appointed by council to act as the CFO. Ms. Bauer is also a chartered accountant, and she has experience in the financial sector, and she also has experience within the NHBRC. Chairperson, before I proceed, may I just indicate to you that the term of this council comes to an end in July. This council has initiated a number of initiatives, including the operations model, the ops model, as well as chair, the inspection model, amongst other initiatives. I believe, and I would like to indicate that it would be the new council that will then continue the initiatives that the current council has commenced with. Chairperson, may I then say with pleasure that I would like to hand over to Mr. Boy, our acting CEO, who will now present the NHBRC's briefing on the budget, the strategic plans, and the revised APP for 2021 and 2022. Thank you very much, Chair. And over to you, Mr. Boy, acting CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Dr. Bayat. Good afternoon, Chairperson of the committee. Good afternoon to the honorable members, Minister, DM, DG, colleagues, good afternoon.
Can we see you?
I'm going to try to... I'm struggling to show my video on my slides, Chairperson.
Proceed, sir. Oh, now we can see.
As the Chairperson has indicated, we are before this committee to brief the committee on the two documents which are quite important in the NHBRC, which is the 5-year corporate plan, as well as the strat plan for 2021-22. Those documents were developed quite extensively with some inputs being made by the council members, and they were subsequently approved and submitted to the National Department. Both of those documents, Chairperson, do contain the budgets that are going to fund the programs as identified. Can we move on to the next slide? In terms of the presentation itself, Chair, I will just touch briefly on the 5-year targets, and then I will break them down into how we are going to then implement these on a yearly basis. Now, in terms of our next slide, in terms of our strategy, Chair, I will not bore the committee because that hasn't changed. It has been extracted from our legislation. That has not changed, so I will not get into that. Next slide, please. Next slide. Yes, this one. Now, in terms of the corporate plan, Chairperson, which is a 5-year plan, as well as our APP for 2021-22. Now, both of those plans, they contain three programs. Now, program one is administrative in nature. It focuses internally i.e. on issues of governance, issues of the NHPRC attaining and maintaining a clean audit throughout this five-year planning period. And program two, Chairperson, it focuses on regulation, which talks to the registration of home builders, renewals, the issues around inspections. Maybe before I move on to program three, Chair, with your permission, I just want to talk briefly on what has been done, because there was a cry around the efficiency of the inspection model of the NHPRC. Now, there were engagements that happened with our council. We undertook to review the inspection model of the NHPRC. That was done, Chairperson, and they're approved by council. Now we are in the process of implementing that approved inspection model. Now it looks at, on a high level, at three things. Now the first one being, how do we then hold the competent person of the home builder to account when there are issues? And secondly, it looks at the tools that we are using to conduct our inspections. And then thirdly, it looks at our policies and procedures in terms of how then do we conduct these inspections, as well as the issue of visibility of our inspectors on site. Program three, next slide. Program three, then Chairperson, talks to the issue of regulation, which is your now enrollment in both the subsidy and non-subsidy sectors. Now, in terms of the KPIs in program one, Chairperson, we have about 9 KPIs in program one. And then in program two, we have about 14 KPIs. And then in program three, we have 3 KPIs. So in program one, Chair, we speak of the NHPRC maintaining, because we have been getting an unqualified audit opinion from the AG in the past couple of financial years. So the plan is for us to maintain that position with no material findings. Second one is us looking at the issues of visibility. How do we as the NHPRC become visible in the market? Because there was a cry that the NHPRC is not known in the market. So in one of the KPIs that we have on program one is an implementation there of a communication plan. We also talk about social transformation, Chair, that looks at how do we then add value in terms of driving transformation in the sector, looking at how do we then target certain designated groups when we procure our goods and services. That also talks to the BEE spend that we are also targeting. Next slide. Now, in terms of the other program that we have, which is program two, Chairperson, we're now looking at the registration of home builders. Now, where we're looking at having compliant home builders who will then engage in the project of constructing the houses. And we also look at training technical professionals. We've since extended our training, Chairperson, focus on the training of youth, women-owned companies, people living with disabilities, as well as we've since included military vets in the training that we provide. In terms of the targets, of the number that we are targeting, those are contained on the slides before you, Chairperson and honorable members. Next slide. I've spoken about the other program that we have, Chairperson's program three, that talks to the enrollment. So here we do enroll all homes constructed in the non-subsidy sector as well as the subsidy sector. And these are the homes that then we deploy our inspectors to enroll. So we're looking at enrolling all homes within 15 days that are submitted to the NHPRC. And then the last one is the development of and design of the green first zero energy model house. The plan for that, Chairperson, has been done in the 2020-21 financial year. Now, in the year that we are in, as we entered the financial year, now we're looking now at the development of that building. Next slide. Now, what we've also done, Chair, we've also looked at what has been the impact of COVID-19 on the sector. with a focus on our NHBRC. So we've also identified risks that will pose a challenge as we implement all of these programs. And what we've done, we've also developed mitigation factors that we will then implement as we track the implementation of this APP as well as the five-year corporate plan. What council has also done, Chair, was to also look at the operating model of the NHBRC to try and firstly understand whether are we efficient in carrying out our mandate. So we've then done a complete overhaul of our operating model that has since been approved by council and also shared with the national department. Now, if aim, Chairperson, is to ensure that as a regulator, we have teeth in the sense that we are able to hold people to account as we regulate, protect housing consumers, and we are also looking at efficiencies, the operating costs of running the NHBRC. We had identified that it was quite expensive to run the NHBRC in the current model. Hence the review of the model and to develop a cost-effective operating model for the NHBRC. Next slide. Now, Chairperson, with your guidance, I've touched on a high level in terms of the programs that we have and the targets that we set for ourselves for 2020-21 and the five-year plan. Now, the next few slides now, they get into detail in terms of how those numbers are allocated. I don't know whether, Chair, you would want me to get into that, or should I then allow the acting CFO to touch briefly, Chair, on the budget that is going to fund this program, how we've allocated certain funds to ensure that we are able then to fulfill all of these programs that we've set for ourselves.
Give us the details, and then the CFO will then give us the budget.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Now, I had said, Chair, that we've got the three programs. Program one, which is administrative in nature. Now, it looks at issues of us attaining a clean audit for year 21-22, and also if you look at the outer years going up to 2024-25, we also look at the implementation of the compliance, which is quite important, but we need to comply with all the prescripts that are governed by NHBRC. So we've elevated that checklist into the level one scorecard. So across the 5 years, we need to ensure that then we comply with all of those prescripts. And then we also do have an internal audit function in-house. There is a plan that is approved annually by the Audit and Risk Committee. So we're looking at implementing that plan over the 5 year period and also in the next year, which is 2021-22, as well as the anti-fraud and corruption plan that we are looking at implementing and tracking on the level one. Next slide. Now, in terms of transformation, Chairperson, we've identified that the NHBRC has to play a role in terms of how transformation is driven in the sector. So we've also elevated this into our level one scorecard in terms of how is the NHBRC contributing in this transformation that we want to see in the sector. And then that also talks to the BE spend that we are targeting for 2021 and also for the outer years. Next slide. Now, program two, Chairperson, is a regulation as derived from our own act, which talks about the registration of home builders, the renewals, the inspections of homes in the subsidy and non-subsidy sector. We've got the baseline there in terms of the audited number, which is the 1920 of 3,680. Because of COVID, the effect of COVID-19 on our operations, we had to review and revise our targets lower. We've done that, but if you check our performance into the outer years, you can see that we are projecting a slight increase going into 2024-25. That also talks to the numbers that we've targeted for the renewals of those home builders who have registered with the NHBRC. And then in terms of the inspections, now we're looking at inspecting all homes, Chairperson, in the non-subsidy and the subsidy sector, homes that are registered with the NHBRC. We want to inspect all of them. Hence, there was a drive for us to review and look at the inspection model as is, with a view of enhancing it. So that will then look at both subsidy and non-subsidy sector. And now in terms of our enforcement as well, we do charge and discipline non-complying home builders. So we are also elevating that, where we are prosecuting non-complying home builders. So it has been elevated to our level 1 scorecard. Next slide. I'll touch on this. Now, in terms of our training, I did indicate, Chair, that previously our training was focused on emerging home builders. We've since expanded our training, Chairperson, to include training of builders, which we were doing in the past. We've also then had a focused training now that looks at the training of youth, the training of women, the training of military veterans, and the numbers, Chairperson, are contained in the slides in terms of what are we targeting for 2020-21, as well as the outer year going up to 2024-25. We are also looking at training technical professionals within the sector, the training of artisans, as well as the training of people living with disabilities. So this is the focused training that we've developed at the NHBRC, and we've elevated this to its importance in the NHBRC into our level 1 scorecard. Next program. Now, the next program, it talks to now consumer protection. Now, that's where now we are enrolling all homes that are enrolled with the NHBRC in the subsidy sector and the non-subsidy sector. So we are saying we want to enroll all compliant enrollments that are approved within 15 days. So all of those need to be enrolled within 15 days once we establish that they are compliant. So that would then talk to your enrollment in both subsidy and subsidy. Next slide. I also touched on this one, and then the next slide. Now, we've also done an assessment, Chairperson, in terms of trying to identify what are the risks that are there that will pose a challenge as we implement these programs. So we've listed the risks on the slide. This information is contained in the full document that look at what outcome we want to achieve, what are the risks that are identified in us attaining that outcome, as well as the mitigations that we are putting in place to try and mitigate against those risks. So those are contained in this slide as well as in the actual document that is happening. Next slide. So, Chairperson, with your permission, then I will then ask Chairperson, honorable members, that our acting CFO just briefly takes members through the budget that Council has approved for us to be in a position to fund these programs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, acting CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, members, and my fellow colleagues.
Sorry, Chairperson, can I also ask that Acting CFO has the camera on, please?
I will attempt to put it on, Acting CEO. I have the camera on, is that fine?
Proceed, ma'am. Proceed.
Thank you. Before I get into the numbers, I just want to briefly give the operating context to the financial perspective that we find ourselves in. I think some of it has already been touched on by the acting CEO, so I will be brief. We have complied with implementing our cost containment guidelines throughout the planning period under review. While we were formulating these numbers, we had just come out of the hard lockdown and we were still in a position of very high uncertainty with regards to where the markets were going. We saw some low economic activity and growth as a result of COVID. There was also substantial shifts in the subsidy sector with regards to availability of land and budgets. What we do aspire to maintain to is to maintain our warranty profits over our planning period so that we can meet our objectives and to the housing consumers. Our investment planning has always been based on a very conservative investment strategy, and we are also looking at the introduction of the Housing Development Fund, which will be a new investment portfolio that NHBRC is looking to to bring into effect during this period. And also, obviously, very important is to maintain all of our cash requirements so that we will find ourselves able to meet our commitments. In terms of our guiding principles for our budget, it was very important for us to align our financial resources to make sure that we can achieve the strategic objectives. I think these have also been touched on by our chairperson and acting CEO. We are very cautious with regards to our cost base to keep that as low as possible. And as I mentioned, to ensure that we continue applying our cost containment guidelines, our warranty fund profits to be maintained, and also to ensure that our warranty fund assets are not utilized to maintain our operating profit. We want to keep those two numbers separate. And also to embed a culture of accountability, efficiency, value, and innovation within the NHBRC. What we anticipate that this budget will deliver in terms of our 2021-2022, I think it's obvious that our enrollment, non-subsidy enrollment numbers, as well as our subsidy enrollment numbers, have decreased compared to prior years. This was, as I mentioned, a period of low economic activity that we found ourselves in. And our home builders and developers alike have mentioned that there is an oversupply currently of units in our non-subsidy sectors that they would first need to offload before they would enroll newer units. So our number is somewhat lower than in previous years at 40,000. Subsidy home enrollments is also lower at 47,836 units due to the policy shift at the department. This is also seen in terms of our subsidy project enrollments that have actually increased because the belief is that the strategy will be shifting to providing serviced land rather than home units. Our total inspections for non-subsidy and subsidy is sitting at 141,000 inspections. This is higher than our total enrollment figures because some of these inspections roll forward from previous financial years. So that's why the number is not exactly in line with the enrollment numbers. With regards to registrations and renewals, registrations we think there will be...
Chairperson, I've lost the sound. I'm not sure it's only me.
It's you only. We have our sound, Mr. Zeki. Check on the your budget. Proceed, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Registrations, we are expecting somewhat of a decline due to the decline in the economic activity, so we budgeted 2,930 new registrations for the 2021-2022 financial year. Then renewals, we are hoping to maintain our current base at 14,435 with a slight increase from prior year. We are also aiming, as the acting CEO mentioned in previous slides, to train a total of 9,000 people. I'll just touch briefly on the key projects. I think a lot has been spoken about already in terms of the new inspectorate model, where we're wanting to align our strategy to the new operating model, the digitalization, where we are moving to an online platform where builders will be able to register and renew online as opposed to coming to the offices, the organizational review, where we want a fit-for-purpose organization, and then the financial sustainability, where we want to, in light of our decreased revenues, to make sure that our organization remains financially sustainable. Putting some numbers to the units that I mentioned in the previous slides, we are proposing a total revenue for the 2021-2022 financial year of $759 million. I think due to the factors that I already mentioned, as opposed to our prior year budgets, there is somewhat of a decrease, particularly with regards to around our insurance premium revenue, the top line. We are coming in at $678 million. I mentioned the 40,000 units that we are anticipating for non-subsidy enrollments. What we are also seeing, the current trend is that units are being enrolled at lower values. So in other words, our rand value also decreases as well as our unit value because people are enrolling at lower enrollment values, so particularly between the 800 to 1 million, which means lower revenue in terms of our bands. As also mentioned, we're wanting to decrease our expenditure. We had an approved budget of 809 million. We forecasted a 736, and we are proposing a decrease so we would get to our 724 million in terms of expenses. What we are really wanting to achieve is an operating profit situation, and we feel that with this budget we will be able to achieve a operating profit that is before our investment income of 10 million. In terms of investment income, we took quite a conservative approach. Currently, our portfolio is geared largely towards money market type investments, and with the decrease in the interest rates, we anticipated that we would see somewhat of a decline in our interest received and investment income revenues, but we would, combined with our operating profit as well as the net investment income, we would have a surplus for the year of 487 million. This is just touching briefly on our revenue through the composition. As mentioned before, 96% of our revenue is from non-subsidy enrollments, subsidy home enrollments, and subsidy projects. So we've seen a decline in terms of the non-subsidy and subsidy, and somewhat of an increase. I won't go too much into this slide. It's just a further breakdown of our revenue. This is also really just showing the split for our non-subsidy between speculative and sectional title. Again, there's a decrease in the units and the rand values, as I alluded to previously. With regards to subsidy, I think I also mentioned the shift from home enrollments towards the project enrollments. In terms of our operating expenses, we are, as mentioned, we are trying to get our expenses down. We're sitting on 844 million with our prior year approved budget. We're anticipating 749 million. What we're really trying to do is decrease our administration expenses and permanent staff costs. In terms of the balance sheet, our capital expenditure is geared towards the project that we were anticipating, as mentioned earlier, with regards to the digitalization and the new inspectorate model. So a large portion of our CapEx has been allocated to the software and computer equipment to enable those projects to come to fruition. We are still maintaining a very positive balance sheet. We finished off our current 2021 financial year on 7.6 billion. We are proposing that we will grow to 8.6 billion in the next financial year. In terms of our cash flow, we are still maintaining a positive cash flow to be able to fund our operating expenses and ensure that we have adequate liquidity to meet all of our obligations. That is the end of my presentation, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. CEO, you want to close or chair? 1 minute to close.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will ask the chair, Dr. Bayaj, to close.
Of course. Chair, thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you very much to the acting CEO and the acting CFO for the presentations. As we have indicated, we've tried to be as stringent as we possibly could to ensure that the NHBRC remains fiscally strong and that we're able to ensure that our mandate is met. Thank you very much for allowing us this opportunity, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you, Acting CEO and Acting CFO.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. HDA Administrator, Mr. Chain.
Afternoon, Chair, honorable members, honorable DM, DG, Changana, and colleagues. Chair, I am with the Acting CEO, Mr. Stephen Poya, together with the entire executive team from the HDA. Presentation has been circulated. What we have done, Chair, is we've at the end of the presentation just indicated there are four slides that we have that just give an indication of some of the work in progress that we've undertaken. But Chair, just let me, before I hand over to the Acting CEO, just to indicate that the strategic and annual performance plan has been prepared based on the strategic analysis that we've undertaken with the department. Covers a number of aspects, particularly in relation to the MTSF and the roles and responsibilities of the department in relation to that. It also covers some of the aspects which we've raised as part of the annual report, as well as some of the matters that were identified by the portfolio committee members together with the minister, particularly in relation to some of the weaknesses and deficiencies that exist. I think what we will do, Chair, is then I'll ask the acting CEO together with the team and then also our acting CFO to present the financial information in respect of the strategic and annual performance plan. Mr. Poya.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope I'm audible. Chair, thank you very much for giving us an opportunity to present the strategic plan and the annual performance plan of the HDA to the Deputy Minister and to the other portfolio committee members that are present and the administrator and the executives of HDA. Chair, just to introduce the presenters for the session, we will have Ms. Tebogo Sejani, who will present the strategic plan and will be supported by Ms. Memeng Tsehla, who is our acting CFO. Just in introducing the process we went through, Chair, in developing the strategic plan and ultimately the annual performance plan for 2021-22. It was an extensive process which was approved by the board of HDA, and that process involved engagement with all our staff members within the HDA, and we also relooked at our vision and mission, and that will be explained as the presentation comes through. But in essence, Chair, what we wanted to achieve was for the HDA to be able to execute this primary mandate, which is that of a developer and a developer of choice, and make sure that that particular mandate, through certain strategic projects, we're able to see that the HDA moves towards that and do more development than actually being an implementing agent on behalf of municipalities and provinces. And that's what you're going to see as a theme throughout this particular presentation that we presented today. And I will hand over then, Chair, to Tebogo and the strategic team, and then Ms. Memeng will come in to do the financial part. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity to present the HDA Strategic Plan and the Annual Performance Plan. Good afternoon, Members of Parliament, Members of the Portfolio Committee, and good afternoon to colleagues in the boardroom and colleagues in the National Department. I will be taking you through the Strategic Plan and the Annual Performance Plan. The purpose of this process is to have the plans noted by the Portfolio Committee. As the Acting CEO has already mentioned, these plans have been submitted to, have been tabled already, and they are now being noted by the Portfolio Committee. Next slide, please. This is basically the table of contents for the presentation. I will skip through it. Mini, if you can just send to the next slide, please. Next slide. As the CEO mentioned, the development of the strategic strategic plan for the HDA involved a rigorous process of consultation with HDA staff and as well as with the Department of Human Settlements, and it was approved by the board. Key to this process was to ensure that the HDA moved towards being a full developer of choice for this sector, as it has already been that has already been included in the HDA Act. It's just that over the years, the HDA has focused primarily on the implementation support component of its mandate. We felt that at this point, we also had to look at the vision and the mission of the agency to align it to the strategic direction that the agency is taking, and we revised the vision of the agency to reflect the following: that the HDA must be a public sector developer of choice, providing integrated, sustainable human settlements and security of Kenya. We also supported that by revising the mission of the HDA to ensure that the mission gives fit to the vision that we have outlined. The vision looks at accelerated delivery of spatially transformed, integrated, and sustainable human settlements. Part of the work of the HDA is to ensure that we provide security of tenure and asset wealth to our beneficiaries, to our communities. While doing that, we're also looking at transforming the human settlement sector to be inclusive of the country's demographic profile, with a special focus on the marginalized sectors of women, youth, and persons with disability. Next slide. As already mentioned, the purpose of the revised strategy of the HDA is to ensure that the HDA fulfills its mandate in terms of the entirety of the HDA Act. As the Minister of Human Settlements already pronounced this in 2014 and also in 2016, so we have aligned all our processes internally to ensure that we rise to the occasion in terms of this new or this fulfilling this entire mandate. While we focus on the implementing the developer role, we will not be neglecting the role that the support role that we have been providing in the sector, which is also part of the mandate of the HDA. So over the years, we will be rolling out programs that ensure that we are slowly becoming the developer of choice, while at the same time providing the implementation support, program management support, and all the other aspects of the HDA mandate. While we do so, we also want to make sure that we do not duplicate the work of other human settlement agencies, that we do not replace the constitutional responsibilities of provincial and municipal departments of human settlements, and that we ensure that focused application of limited resources to gain maximum outcomes and impact in the sector. And the new strategy enables the agency to build on its strengths and successes to date. It addresses the gaps and weaknesses in the public sector's capacity to effectively implement its human settlement programs and services. It also enables the agency to implement projects within PHDAs, which are a key program in this MTSF period that are aligned to the national, provincial, and municipal human settlement master plans and other spatial development plans. Next slide, please. We have already mentioned that the strategy shifts the agency from just focusing on the current support and facilitative role that we have been playing, and also dependencies on IPs with municipalities and provinces and MTOPs from the HDA to a more focused implementation role. That is what we will be focusing on. It requires that the agency acquire and develop land for its own human settlement projects that will be developed or implemented in partnership with strategic private sector partners, and will share project and financial risk in the projects that we will be implementing going forward. The strategy also strengthens the HDA's balance sheet. It focuses on ensuring that the HDA's own balance sheet is strengthened, and it reduces the dependency on the fiscus. In fact, the intention is that at some point the HDA has to become self-sufficient by being able to generate income from the projects that we will be implementing. It positions the agency to be responsible for the full value chain of property developer services and thus to be fully accountable for the achievement of tangible outputs coming from that process. Next slide, please. This slide basically shows the long-term, medium to long-term operating model, and this speaks mainly to how the HDA will be financed over the long-term, the medium-term and the long-term period. The CFO will emphasize this point when she presents. Next slide, please. The next slide gives a high-level overview of the outcomes of the HDA in the five-year period that the strategy covers. Also, these outcomes are aligned to the MTSF. As you can see, that they're aligned to MTSF priorities. The one outcome that we are focusing on, given the challenges that the HDA has experienced, is to ensure that we receive an unqualified audit report for the financial year ahead and the next financial years after that. In terms of the integrated and sustainable human settlements and security of tenure as an outcome, we will be focusing as the HDA to ensure that we deliver in the PHDA's programs and we acquire land within PHDA's. 6,000 hectares of land will be acquired and released to the human settlement sector for further development in the period that I've just mentioned. And we will also acquire 4,000 hectares of land that are not necessarily in PHDA's but are suitable for human settlement development. The HDA has also the responsibility in the sector to ensure that it rezones land that has been acquired. We will be rezoning land that was acquired in the previous MTSF, the 2014 to the 2019 MTSF. We have quantified the hectares of land that were acquired in that period that fall within priority housing development areas, and we will ensure that by the end of the five-year period of the strategy implementation process, 100% of that land has been rezoned. In terms of housing units that will be delivered at a high level in the next 5 years, we will then deliver 25,420 housing units, and the service side will deliver 23,586. And then the title deeds will be 35,499. Next slide, please. This slide provides an overview of some of the strategic initiatives that we have taken, that we are embarking on as the HDA. I think I'm ahead of the slides. Mr. Mini, move to the next slide, please. The strategic initiatives that the HDA will be implementing that demonstrate that we are now moving to becoming full developers, and the administrator will add some more on these aspects at the end of the presentation, but we have identified five key priority projects that the HDA will be implementing. The HDA will play various roles in these programs, including that of being a developer, including that of being a partner with private sector developers. And these projects are identified in Savannah City in Gauteng. For that specific project, we identified that we will be able to deliver 240 units. For Stellenstreker project, which is also in Gauteng, we are looking at 540 units. Ilofs Park project, which is also in Gauteng, will deliver 2,976 high-density mixed-use housing units and the developments. And then in the Eastern Cape, we are looking at Queenstown. This is on land that the HDA owns, and the HDA will be able to develop and deliver high-density mixed-use developments. And also in Hartbeespoort, which is also in Gauteng, on HDA-owned land, these we will deliver 2,207 high-density mixed-use. I think it's important to also mention that these programs are delivered along with the rapid land release program that the HDA is participating in, and while we deliver this project, we'll also ensure that we touch on key programs that are designed to ensure that there's affordable housing stock being made available to low-income earners. So the government housing scheme program will also be implemented through this. The FLIST and GAP market will also be implemented through this. An added advantage of this program is that we will also be looking at ensuring that we utilize IBTs in delivering these programs as we move forward. Next slide, please. This section now takes us into the APP for the 2021-22 financial year. This is the program structure of the HDA. The HDA runs four programs. The first program looks at administration. The second program looks at land management and priority housing development areas. This is the program that is responsible for the acquisition and the release of land for the sector. And program three looks at program planning and design and regional coordination. This is where programs such as the catalytic projects, informal settlement upgrading program, and the distressed mining town program is distressed revitalization of distressed mining communities is implemented. In addition to that, it is through this program that we provide the implementation support services to municipalities, to provinces, and to the sector in totality. This is where the housing units are delivered, the title deeds are delivered, the sites and services are delivered. The last program is our program for planning, monitoring, evaluation, and IGR. Through this program, the HDA ensures that it provides geographic information systems and maps for the sector for proper planning in terms of housing development. At the same time, we also focus on providing intergovernmental and stakeholder relations. This is key to ensuring that the HDA is able to gain ground in the various programs through the relationships that it establishes with municipalities or provinces, because most of the HDA programs requires that there's an agreement in place that has been signed for us to be able to deliver on the objectives of our strategy and our annual performance plan. Next slide, please. I will skip the slides on the external environmental analysis and internal environmental analysis. Chairperson, you will indicate if you'd like me to speak to that, but I would like to focus on the programs and what we intend to achieve through the implementation of these programs. As I mentioned already, we run four programs within the HDA. The first program is administration. It is important to just speak a little bit about the administration component of our programs within the HDA, particularly in view of the issues that had been raised previously around the compliance issues within the HDA, managing the irregular expenditure and all of that. So through this program, systems have been put in place to ensure that the HDA complies with the regulatory framework within which it operates, and also that all the challenges that we have faced in the past are also taken into consideration and also acted upon. Obviously, as I mentioned already, the issue of the unqualified audit is a key one for the HDA that we are targeting for this year. We are also looking at supporting the transformation and empowerment of designated groups. It's a critical area for us. These groups include women, youth, persons with disability, and military veterans. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Under Program 2, as I've already mentioned, through this program, we implement the Land Assembly Program and the Priority Housing Development programs within the sector itself. Through this program, we are targeting in the 2021-22 financial year to develop 47 integrated implementation programs for PDAs. These are development plans basically for PHDAs that have already been declared. The committee would recall that PHDAs were declared in the previous financial year, 136 of them. And we, through the MTSF period, we will be making sure that the development plans are completed and conclude the development plans before the MTSF is completed so that the actual implementation can begin to take place. We are looking at acquiring well-located land within PHDAs for the 2021-22 financial year. We're looking at 1,500 hectares of land within PHDAs. The next target is looking at land acquired or rezoned within PHDAs, while the target for the 5 year strategy implementation period is 100%. For the 2021-22, we are looking at rezoning 30% of that target. I must mention that this is aligned to the MTSF requirements that the HDA has to deliver on. Next slide, please. We will also be acquiring 1,000 hectares of land that will be rezoned also for human settlements. What we are avoiding in this period is to acquire land that will be accumulated and then rezoned later on. So what the HDA is working on is to ensure that as we acquire land in this period, we also start the process of rezoning the land that has been acquired. Next slide, please. The next slide looks at Program 3, which includes the Informal Settlements Upgrading Program. This program is also a key program in the MTSF period of the HDA. We are looking at 1,500 informal settlements upgraded during the MTSF. However, in the 2021-22 financial year, the HDA is looking at 375 informal settlements supported for upgrading to Phase 3. We will also be looking at ensuring that we implement 4 programs end to end in the financial year, in the current financial year. Next slide, please. The HDA is also responsible for providing program management support for catalytic projects that are implemented in the sector. So the HDA will ensure that 50 catalytic projects are provided with implementation support. At the same time, in this financial year, we have targeted 6 catalytic projects to be assisted to raise capital for the infrastructure required for the projects. Next slide, please. We will continue to provide support in the revitalization of distressed mining communities. 23 distressed mining communities that have already been identified. The HDA ensures that the technical support and implementation support that is provided to these communities. Next slide, please. The next slide just gives a summary of the slides that are coming after this in terms of the number of housing units that we will deliver. It's important to mention that in the preparation of these targets, specifically based on the learnings that we picked up in the previous financial year, we have ensured that these housing units, the targets are developed after having gone through a thorough analysis of the business plans of provinces, but also internally within the HDA, we have established a committee that will look at project readiness to ensure that whatever it is that we put on our APP, those projects are ready for implementation. Previously, we have not met targets because we'd have projects that appear in business plans, but they're not necessarily ready for implementation, and that has caused some challenges within the agency previously. That then explains why the target is slightly lower than it usually is, but it is because there's work that has been done to ensure that all the ends up in the APP has already been, is ready for implementation. That is also the target for service sites, 4,420. Next slide, please. I won't go into the next slide. The slide that I've just gone through was summarizing these slides. However, just to give an overview of what happens in these slides, HDA has 3 regions. So each one of the regions of the HDA have specific targets to meet for us to be able to meet the 5,000 housing units. So this section provides a breakdown of which region is responsible for which target in terms of the housing units, service sites, and entitlements. Next slide, please. Next slide. The last point that I want to make in terms of this program is that the HDA will also be implementing the bucket eradication program. Agreements have already been concluded with the Northern Cape and the Free State, and the intention is that 100% implementation will be completed in the current financial year for the bucket eradication program. Next slide, please. Next slide. The last program of the HDA, the last target that I want to focus on under this program is the title deed program. We are looking at delivering 1,456 title deeds in this financial year. Program 4 entails planning, monitoring, and evaluation and intergovernmental relations. Through this program, we are looking at ensuring that 100% of spatial transformation planning analysis and implementation support is provided on project programs within the HDA, that the HDA will be delivering on. I think I will end it here. I will then hand over to our acting CFO to take the committee through the budget. Thank you.
Memeng, I think you're muted.
Thank you. Can you hear me still? I think this project now.
No, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Afternoon, Honorable GM, members, DG, colleagues. I will be presenting the budget of the HDA. We are on the first slide where we are saying our total consolidated budget is 467 million. Is a reduction compared to prior year of 475, and we have seen a reduction on our NTOC funding from 211 to 197, and this is based on our drive to say the HDA will now do the budget based on signed funding agreement. If we go to the next slide, as Tebo has mentioned, that we have, this is a consolidated. In our consolidated budget, we are budgeting a confirmed grant funding of 235,379 from our Department of Human Settlement, and we will be receiving a medium-term operational plan. This is funding that we're getting from our provinces of 197 million. Our operational expenditure is sitting at 210,176,991, with our payroll cost at 224,724 million. Next slide. Our budget has been aligned to the new strategy and the new ATP. What we have budgeted for is the four programs that Mr. Johnny has mentioned. In program one, we are budgeting for a total of 131,119,725, which is made up of the first programs as the details below. Our second program, which is land management and priority housing development area, it has a budget of 27,448,172. Our third program, planning design and regional coordination, has a budget of 254,116,875. This is one of our big programs, and Mr. Jamie has mentioned the work is expected to be done in this program. Program 4 is our planning and monitoring, and it's for a budget of 225,718,825. On the next slide, we are showing a details of how this budget has been presented in terms of the EMP. I will go to the next slide. Our next slide is the revenue, and we are confirming our transfers that we'll be receiving from the government on the human settlement of the 235 and the 197 million that we are receiving from our NTOC foundation. Next slide. On our statement of our financial position, the ACA looking at closing the financial year with total assets of 1.6 billion, and some of those, part of those is inventory. We would be increasing our land inventory when we are holding with the ACA for release to public land. We will also have our cash and cash equivalents from provinces, the funds which will be committed and based on funding agreements at the end. Next slide. Our cash flow data on the next slide, Mr. Min. We are budgeting a positive cash flow, a healthy cash flow statement for the next financial year, where we are paying 111,543 will be a positive cash flow when we have increased our cash and cash equivalents every year. Chairperson, what we've also added in our presentation is as the HDA has concluded the audit recently, the annual report was tabled. We said that we would highlight to the committee the work that has happened since our audit has been concluded, and noting that we received a qualified first opinion. And we are working on improving our audit status. So we went and identified the key that will assist us to get to a better audit opinion. One effective and efficient management and good governance of the HDA. Our key that we have identified is the issues of SCM. The issues of tenders increasing in our regular expenditure. Our risk mitigation is that we have strengthened working hard on strengthening our SPM controls, our SPM processes, and these controls will assist us to detect and prevent the regular expenditure, business and wasteful expenditure. The issues of fraud and corruption. We now have a whistleblowing service provider appointed. We are receiving whistleblowing reports, and this whistleblowing report are tabled in the audit and risk committee, and they are being investigated. We have done a fraud and corruption awareness, and we are planning to continue with those trainings on an annual basis. We are working on compliance with our corporate calendar. And we are in the process of reviewing all the HDA policies for updating. Next slide. On the list of our mandate, Ms. Tajani has also mentioned that we have a new strategy that's been approved by the board. We are waiting towards aligning our strategy to the HDA Act, and we our transformation and empowerment pilot. We have reviewed existing specific dynamic indicators to improve on our transformation and empowerment pilot. We have established a HDA 11 set target for transparency, procurement, enterprise, and supplier development pillars. And we have developed an implementation plan. The issues of land, we have obtained a cabinet approval to remove 40,000 hectares of land, and we have prepared a multi-year land acquisition pipeline. Also on the issues of land, where we are finding a change that we could be finding ourselves the potential for land price provision. We have reviewed our controls and processes on land acquisition, and our land acquisitions are conducted by independent valuation, not only acquisitions for the title. Next slide. On the outcome of integrated and sustainable business settlement in the security of channels, our risk that we've identified is that our projects and programs were not delivered on time within budgets according to the scope. We are now working with the provinces and the national departments on business planning processes we are implementing a proper project management process. And as I've mentioned earlier, that we are now accepting projects that are fully funded with mandates and with implementation protocols signed off by the three parties. On the misalignment of our national priorities, we reviewed our planning between fiscal alignment and we coordinated our budget between our provinces and municipalities and the HCA in the signing of the implementation protocol. Our GIS strategy is reflecting that, and we have developed a GIS strategy for the new NGSS period, and in communication to all stakeholders to address the time frame, the resource limitations, governance, and data quality issues. We've developed a special transformation scoping tool, a framework is developed by our monitoring team, which formulated appropriate energy indicators in consultation with stakeholders, and we have secured a baseline data. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Chair. As we discussed with the department and the minister, it's just important that we illustrate that the work that part of the work that is contained in the strat plan and APP is already work that's been done and is work in progress. So you'll see on this slide the work that the HBA is doing in Masipumalela in Western Cape on behalf of both the city together with the province. We have the relevant agreements in place, and not only are we dealing with the medium to long term solutions, but also some of the temporary solutions. So you'll see that, and as members of the portfolio are aware, this is what happened during the course of this calendar year. So you'll see that the HDA assisted with the phase one. The phase two, this is the planned 420 units, and we're envisaging the completion date was the 15th of April, which we've managed to achieve, and we're now under the construction phase for the interim services. This is in relation to the work that the HDA has been this financial year. We commenced work on this, and this is a planned 2,748 units that will be the medium to long-term solution. Okay, just to indicate, and I think it's been indicated in the presentation, what are some of these buildings that the HDA has received in terms of the agreements that the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform has presented. One of the state-owned entities that is designated to give us first right of refusal is Telkom. So you'll see that it's Eskom. So in the case of Eskom, we purchased what was the Braamfontein regional head office. And that's just some features of the Braamfontein site. This purchase has been finalized together with the province. We expended an amount of 60 million, and on an as and when required basis, Chair, we'd be welcome to take you through this. The building is envisaged to provide for student and social affordable rental housing. Then also in Kimberley, this is the last one. Chair, this is the Kimberley building that the Kimberley Eskom head office that we've acquired, and we've acquired this for 16 million from Eskom, and together with the province, together with the Soplaki municipality, we'll be undertaking some social rental and student housing. Given the fact that the university has been set up in Soplaki. Thank you, Chair. If I then may hand over to the DM or the Director General. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chain and your team. Mr. Changan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think the team has covered everything. I'll hand over back to the Deputy Minister or to yourself.
GM Chwete.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I know that this has been in this committee, and I think it's a quite long presentation with many pages, and I want to apologize for that. We're trying to give you as much as we can in terms of the information, but I think the DG will actually take and introduce the team, but the team was introduced, yes, and they will take the plans, and then I will come at the end if my network is still allowing me to do so. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much, NHPRC and HDA, for the presentation. I'm now going to allow honorable members to interact with the report as presented. I have honorable Mosala, I have honorable Zeke, and I have honorable Powell. There is a hand from Wing. Who's Wing?
It's Mashiko.
Oh, hey, Mashiko. Yeah, okay, honorable Mashiko. Yes, thank you. As I've indicated, honorable members, let's shoot.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to direct first few questions to NHBRC. In their presentation, they spoke about a number of 673 disciplinary hearings that were conducted by the NHBRC, resulting in 64 home builders being suspended for 2019-20 financial year. According to them, some of the offenses were in relation to failure by home builders to rectify major structural defects. So I just want to check with you with regards to the issue of Dalana. What happened? Can you please take us through? The other Chairperson, is it appears that the value of a number of targets has been reduced from the previous financial year, seemingly due to an expected poorer performance during 2020-2021. For example, in 2020-2021, under Program 1, the target was for 95% of the approved risk management plan to be implemented. However, this target has been reduced to 90% of the risk management plan to be implemented during 2021-22. Similarly, under Program 3, the target for the implementation of social transformation program was for 4 programs to be implemented during 2020-2021. However, the target for 2021-22 is for 3 social transformation programs to be implemented. What are the reasons for these reductions? Chairperson, the other question on NHBRC, the budgeted amount for goods and services has increased from 306.8 million in 2020-2021 to 324 million in 2021-22, translating to 5.6 increase. What are the reasons for this increase? With regards to HDA, as I'm about to finish, what is the current status of the interim board? How is the HDA maintaining stability and the continuity despite the recent changes in board members? What is the current composition of the board? The other question, Chairperson, could the HDA provide more details of the bucket eradication program it is running? Because in the previous meeting, before we went to our constituency, I mean, recess, we're told that now the issue of bucket eradication system is with HDA. So the question is, can they please provide more details on bucket eradication program it is running? What is the mandate and functions of the HDA in this regard? How many buckets are to be eradicated? Where are these located and what is the nature of the project? Chairperson, as I'm about to conclude, which four informal settlements are to be upgraded to phase three? And which two informal settlements will be assisted with relocation and emergency intervention? How many people or households will benefit from these efforts? Chairperson, the last question is about the six catalyst project to assist in raising capital for the infrastructure projects. So my question is, which are those six catalyst projects? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mosala, Honorable Zweke.
Chair, thanks very much. I think Honorable Mosala has raised many questions that I had. Chair, just to emphasize on the issue of bucket eradication program, Chair, that it has been there for quite some time, and I think we need to complete this project as soon as possible, Chair, because as soon as possible, because there was a commitment from the minister in one of a budget vote that will end this program as soon as possible. So I think we need to fast track this program, Chair. And secondly, Chair, on the issue of when we interacted with HDA in the previous term, they indicated that there is a high vacancy rate in their offices, I think provincial offices or regional offices in Mpumalanga, Gauteng and the Northern Cape. So would like to hear how are they going to address this matter, Chair, of a vacancy rate. And lastly, Chair, on the issue of student accommodation, I want to appreciate and acknowledge the efforts that are made by HDA, Chair, in terms of procuring the or buying the buildings around the two provinces, Chair, for student accommodation. I think this is going to assist our students in terms of accommodation, Chair. You know, our students have been struggling for quite some time, and this is a matter and that we appreciate as the portfolio committee. Can they fast track this process so that in the next year students can be able to be accommodated in those buildings? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Powell.
Thanks, Chairperson. Okay, on HDA, when we had our meeting last term, the salaries was a huge issue. And I note that on page 35 of the presentation, an amount of over 10 million rand has been allocated to the CEO's office. That's the latest CEO of a long string of CEOs. Can we get clarity, please, on if that 10 million rand includes the support staff for the CEO's office as well, or if that's salaries? Can we just get clarity on those line items on page 35 for the HDA's presentation in terms of what salaries the CEO and the CFO are earning? Then the unit cost for other salary levels, the levels 11 and 12 and then 17 to 22 was reduced between 2021 and 2022, while the unit cost increased for salary bands 7 to 10 and 13 to 16. Usually increases or decreases in salary bands form a trend. Can we get reasons for these increases and these decreases? then the overall budget for salaries increased from 215 million rand in 2020 to 2021 to 225 million rand in 2021-2022, despite the plan to implement budget deductions by reducing salary costs through freezing posts that are not prioritized in this upcoming and the next financial year. So to what extent has the HDA implemented these measures, and how should the data presented on the budget for personnel costs be interpreted as these reductions are not visible in the data that the committee has before them? Then on program two, the quarterly targets related to the number of hectares rezoned for human settlements development indicate a target of zero for the first three quarters and a total of 1,000 hectares for the fourth quarters. Why hasn't a staggered approach been adopted? I know that often there's an upswing or a hockey stick effect on quarterly budgets, but it's quite a big target for one quarter. On program three, why are there no quarterly targets for quarter two and quarter three related to the target on upgrading of informal settlements to phase three end to end? And then my last question to the HDA is directly to the CEO, Mr. Poyer. Under the leadership and guidance of the administrator, Mr. Cheney, I'm awaiting some legal information that the minister has authorized to be sent to me from your offices. The minister authorized this back in March and told me in a personal letter to me that she had instructed your offices to provide me with that information in terms of a prior application that went to an appeal. I still haven't received that information, so Mr. Cheney and Mr. Poyer, can I get an indication either by email directly to me or in this meeting when I can expect to get that information? It relates to the Duncan Village program. And then to the NHBCR, I had a query, and potentially, Chair, for the NHBCR, you could answer. I had a query from a building company to say that there were rumors that the NHBCR was going to start charging fixed levies in upcoming years. I don't know, that's a rumor that's circulating in the building community at the moment. I'm happy to send it via email, but I think some clarity needs to be provided over that. Then I note that your high operational expenditure remains a concern. My three specific questions are, can the NHBCR give us some clarity as to what investigations were conducted into the COVID identification projects that were managed by the HDA? I see Honourable Mashlala has asked already about Talana, but I note that there were a number that the Minister had asked the NHBCR to look at. Can we as a committee get information on the findings? I did submit a parliamentary question asking for the full report, and for various reasons was told that I couldn't have a copy of that report. And then the last two questions are, the budgeted amount for goods and services has increased from 306 million rand in the current financial year to 324 million rand in the 2021-2022, which is a 5.6% increase. It's similar to what we saw for the National Department this morning, but obviously at a lower scale. So what are the reasons for this increase? And my last question to the NHBCR is, under Program 3, which is Consumer Protection, the timelines for within which the enrollment applications should be approved have been omitted. In 2020-21, the timeframe of 15 days was stipulated. Is there a reason for this omission? Yeah, those are my questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Powell, Honourable Mashiko.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much. Most of my questions have been asked, but they might have been asked in a different format. My view is that this the difference.
situation. Other questions members have raised, just to on the HDA, to add on what question that raised by Honorable Mashala on the issue of the board. I know that the administrator is standing on the board, on behalf of the board, because the board has been disbanded. But one of the issues that one has realized is that departments, there are more than three departments, or four if I'm not mistaken, in terms of the act, that they should send people to serve in the board, which for me it might be the recipe for the weaknesses of the board itself. I just want to check whether the HDA does not have any intention to relook at the legislation and we get a full board that will be appointed based on the competency and that will make sure that HDA run properly than having this department forwarding people who might not even have capacity in some instances. And because the law says that they must send people in preserving the board, compromise the quality, and so check whether not intending to look at the legislation so that we get the quality that is needed to run the board itself. Those are the two questions that I have, and just to add on other questions, maybe just to emphasize the bucket eradication, just to check the capacity of HDA to finalize the program itself. Through your administration, whether do we have that capacity to finalize the program itself? If we don't have a board and we are not sure of even of the quality that we might get of the board, because the department, those three, four departments has to send people which they are not even going through the process of scrutiny. Do we have that capacity to finalize this program, and looking at the project that you are going to implement? Thank you very much. Can we get response? I think it can be directed from DG Changana, and then we must take the questions first, and then we, or GM to it.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, questions are mostly issues of salaries that must be answered by the DG, and also Duncan Village. Let me make two comments, Chair. The first comment is actually referring to the student accommodation. I want to say thank you very much, Honorable Tseka, for your comment regarding student accommodation, and we are trying our best, and you will get more. We are trying because it has been the cry on the time of student accommodation. And also, I want to say sorry to Honorable Powell, because you've raised the issue on the information that you requested from the department concerning Dagen Village. You haven't received that. I think the DG will speak to that, because I think I was here at the time that you were asking or requesting the information concerning Dangin Village. And also, Chair, the last comment that I would like to make is the issue of the board, which I think the DG will also speak to it, that what I know is that we are in the process of I'm afraid to answer and also HDA and our.
Thank you, DM, DG Changan, and the team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The specific questions that were posed to the two entities will be answered by the administrator and the CEO plus the chairperson of NHPRC. They will respond to those specific questions. On the boards, Chairperson, we've started the process. As you know, that process will end up in cabinet. Minister will have to present the names to cabinet. As you know, we advertised a while ago and we've done the shortlisting by the nominations committee. And then the minister will have to take it through the process so that it can be approved by cabinet, because the acts are very clear that the final decision has to be made in concurrence with cabinet. That process is at an advanced stage, and the minister has been looking at it, because part of what gets done is to take into consideration the geographical representation. In other words, if you are appointing a board of HDA, you also need to take into account representatives from other provinces. In the past, there was too much dominance from Gauteng. So minister is busy with that process. Also, we have to look at gender and equity issues in general. So we'll leave that part to be finalized by the minister. And I think we are fairly at an advanced stage, not only for HDA. Even NHPRC board is coming to an end. We will be advertising. I think it's coming to an end in June, July. So we started the process of appointing a new board at NHPRC. In the past, minister has consulted other ministers, because the Act says the Minister of Cooperative Governance must second an official. In the case of cooperative governance, they have always seconded an official from MISA, who's fairly much okay with the functioning of HDA. And then Public Works also gets represented. National Treasure, they also get represented. The Department of Rural Development also get represented in the entities. Those ministers who didn't want to second, because there are ministers who said we have capacity constraints and we don't want to second anyone, minister can fill that position with additional resources from the list. So it has happened, but it will have to happen in consultation with those ministers, because the Act is fairly straightforward on how departments should be represented in the board. Chairperson, I'll probably come back maybe on this issue again, but for the sake of time, let me hand over to the chairman of NHPRC to guide on how to respond to some of the questions that were directed to NHPRC, and the administrator will do the same as well. Thank you very much.
May I chair person?
Yes, you're welcome, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and thank you, DG, DM, chairperson, and members of the committee. Thank you very much for the questions. I will answer the question that was directed to me by Honourable Powell, and the other issues are largely operational, and in that respect, our acting CEO and our acting CFO will answer those questions. Chairperson, the indication from the Honourable Powell was that there were rumours that were going around that the NHBRC was going to start fixed levies. Chairperson, this is absolutely news to us. As far as I'm aware, there is nothing, no credibility in that comment. It is exactly what the Honourable Member indicated. There are rumours, and certainly from the NHBRC side, we will really appreciate any kind of information that can be forwarded to us so that at least we get an idea as to what the reference is about and what is being said, because certainly from council, and I've checked also with our acting CEO, neither of us is aware of any kind of fixed levies that the NHBRC has in the pipeline. So I hope I've answered Honourable Powell's question. Thank you, Chair. May I then hand over to, will it be in order, Chair, if the NHBRC answers all the questions first?
Yes,
thank you, Chairperson. May I then ask our acting CEO, Mr. Boyd, to please answer the questions that were posed by the Honourable Members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bayat, and thank you, Chairperson. We've noted the questions raised by the Honourable Members. I will respond to the questions, and on the ones that speak to the budget process as well around the escalation in operational costs, I will ask the acting CFO to come and respond to those ones. The first question that were raised by Honorable Mushala, she spoke about a reduction, a revision that was done on two KPIs. The first one was the risk management plan as well as the social transformation KPI. Now, what we did in response to those ones, we did an assessment of how we performed pre-COVID with the NHBRC, and hence we had to then look at what effect COVID has had on our operations. That then resulted in us revising this target downwards, because we had to set a target that is achievable and measurable for ourselves. However, members, if you do take note of what then happened in 2020-2022-23, those KPIs have been revised again with a trend that goes up, because now we are looking at weather in the form of COVID, and then we're looking at now having the new normal, as they call it, post-2021-22. There was a question as well that was raised around the issue of disciplinary hearings for the home builders. The member is correct. All non-compliant home builders are taken through a DC process where ultimately they are fined or they are suspended. I think the question that was raised specifically around the issue of the Talana project, the TRUs. Our involvement with NHBRC, as requested by the department, was for us to come in and do an assessment on the integrity of the structure that we erected on the ground, of which that was done, Honourable Chair and members, and the report with the findings and the proposed remedial action to be undertaken were contained in that report. I stand to be corrected. I think the matter with the Talana project now is with the FIU. I speak under correction. Now, there was a question again that was raised by Honourable Powell around the turnaround times in the enrollment process, where she said previously we indicated the time frame. That hasn't changed, Jefferson, in terms of our turnaround times. We're still saying all enrollments that are compliant in terms of meeting all our requirements will be approved and the enrollment certificate printed within 15 working days. Then there was another question raised by Honorable Powell as well on the investigations that were done on all the TRUs, on the involvement of the NSW before in the investigations that were done. Indeed, we came in and we did the investigation and looked at the integrity of those structures. A report with our findings was submitted together with the proposed remedial action. I'm sure that report, when required, can be provided again, Chairperson. And then I will then ask the acting CFO to talk briefly around the escalation in the goods and services that has been raised by members. Maybe before acting CFO, you come in, there was also a question that was raised by the chairperson of the committee around the registration of projects by provinces. We do note that that concern, chairperson, was raised previously by the committee. There were engagements that since took place between the NSPRC and provinces. I can then report back to the state of the committee. There has been improvement and we are making progress in addressing those issues, chairperson. Thank you very much.
Acting CFO.
Thank you very much. In respect of the questions raised by Honorable Moshala and Powell, it's related to the increase in the operating expenditures for goods and services. We have, as far as possible, tried to decrease these expenditures. Where we're currently sitting is we have had an increase with regards to our data costs for more of our staff working from home, as well as those costs related to bringing our digital services project to fruition. Also, what we have factored into the budget, which we will negotiate further, is the current lease cost escalations that we have in our current lease contracts, which does sway the cost somewhat higher. However, all of these costs are going to be looked at and renegotiated with the landlords because we feel that we, in this current situation, we can reduce these costs as well as decrease our current workspaces. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. HGA.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to ask the acting CEO, Mr. Poyer, together with the acting CFO, just to take some of these points, and then I will come back and address some of the other key salient points, particularly around the question of the budget, as well as the capacity and some of the other strategic issues. Thank you, Mr. Poyer.
Thank you very much, Administrator. Honorable members, thank you very much, DG. Maybe let me start with the bucket eradication program. We as the HDA, indeed, we do have the capacity to be able to execute this particular program. Currently, in terms of information that has been assessed, there's in total about 11,400 buckets that are in the Free State, and there's about 590 in the Northern Cape, and those are the buckets that the HDA will be eradicating as part of the bucket eradication program. We have indeed, or maybe in terms of segregation, per town, we have, we're working in Sithoto, Ngetoana, and Dalesville is a town, and in Sesotho we're working in Fitchburg, Clocolan and Senegal, in Ketoana, Petrosteen, Arlington and Ritz, and then in Dalesville. Those are the Free State, and then in Sianuma, which is Campbell in the Free State. And that's the breakdown of some of the buckets and what we're actually doing in support of DWS as an implementing agent. The program itself is obviously a collaboration between ourselves and the Department of Water and Sanitation, and we are supporting them in implementing this particular program. The other question that was asked by honorable members was the plan that we've submitted for the 2021-22 financial year. Are we confident as the executives of HDA that we have taken due or we have at least paid attention to the fact that they are leading and lagging activities in the plan? And I can confirm to members that we have done that. We have made sure through our processes that we are appreciative of the lagging activities and what are those particular leading activities that are part of the plan. And we do commit and confirm that indeed what we have presented as APP has gone through the necessary due diligence through our processes. And it is the numbers that we put out are numbers that we can be held accountable for as the executives of the HDA. Just to also confirm through you, honorable members, that the information that Honorable Powell has asked about was indeed submitted, and we will just follow up. It was submitted on the 9th of April 2021. Obviously, we went through the necessary national department and the ministry, and that information was submitted by HDA. We will follow up and check, in essence, what has happened with that information. But we did respond to the questions that were asked by the honorable member in terms of the information. What I can do now, Chair, if you allow me, is to give over to my colleagues, the acting CFO and the rest of the executives, in some of the questions that they might want to clarify and answer. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, we can't hear anything. I don't know if it's just me.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for that. If we can, I can take the liberty to specify. We have a budget, a total budget of $436 million. Part of this consolidated budget will be our overhead and our salary. On the line of the CEO, the 10 million that is reported.
Sorry, CFO, can we request those that have mics on to mute your mic because we're unable to hear the CFO. And there is a sound from your system, CFO. If you can be very close, come very close to the mic so that you can be very clear and audible. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My response to the issue of the salaries, which we look at slide number 25, we have a total consolidated budget of $236 million. In that consolidated budget, we have added operational costs and the salaries. On the line of the CEO, where there are 10 million, that 10 million is the operational cost, the salaries of the CEO and the support staff. At the staff level, the CEO, the company secretariat, and other programs that are attached to him. That is included in the 10 million. So it is not only the CEO salary level. On the issue of the earnings on the next slide, our salaries are based on response to the growth of the HDA, the response to our strategy. Some of the issues in our salaries is the capacity for the budgeting of the education, capacity for our student housing. We will enter into contracts as we end the contract for the specific work based on the implementation protocol, and so will be the salaries
excuse me, you were saying the other year that our salary will go down to 232 in the financial year of 2024. And that is in response to our rights as we gain the funding agreement. Our budgets are based on the capacity and the needs of an annual agreement. And I covered the issue of salary.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to ask, I'm not sure, CEO, if Mr. Poser or Daphne Machine will take the matter of the informal settlements detail that Honorable Moslala raised, the names of the informal settlements as well as the six catalytic projects. If not, I suppose we could just then make a commitment to have the information submitted.
I will respond on the informal settlements in the catalytic project, sir. Okay. The catalytic project that will be assisted with capital raising for the infrastructure that is required, the ones that were gazetted through ESA, which is the Infrastructure SA, early on in the year, last year. And the Greater Konobia, which is in KZN, Vista Park 2 and 3, which is in the Free State, Lufering and Malibongwe Ridge, both in Gauteng, and 2 Nodal in the Eastern Cape, and Matlosana N12 in Northwest. All of these projects are actually at implementation, but some of the phases are stuck because of infrastructure that is required. And then the informal settlements that will be upgraded to phase 3, the 4 that are put in the APP, it's in Kaneng, it's in the Northwest. American Extension 13 is also in the Northwest. Nkaneng has got about 10,000 households roughly, and American Extension has got about 1,000 households. These are big settlements that we are dealing with. And then Limpopo, we have Smash Block. It's got about 5,000 households. And in Gauteng, we have Makurutamaga, which is about 1,500. But Makurutamaga and Kutong, there are certain portions that need to be relocated. So the two settlements that we want to assist with relocation is those ones. And we need to find alternative land because of the dolomitic conditions that we have in Kutong and the sinkholes. So those are the questions that were raised, Chairperson. Thank you.
Oh, there is. Do you have Makurutamaga in Gauteng? I thought it's in Limpopo.
In Mogale City. In
okay.
City. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just ask Mr. Apollo to address the points on the question of the land. And the matter raised by Honorable Paul around the time relating to land rezoning. Honorable Chair, ordinarily land rezoning, I mean, it takes anything between about 18 months to 24 months. So it's a long lead item. So we normally project that the target will be met in the last quarter, just to try and deal with the administrative issues relating to approval of land rezoning. What we've experienced so far is that municipal planning tribunals don't always see everyone when they find it. So we just try to take care of that and all the other requirements that are relating to environmental organizations, your checks, and including also taxes. So we try and accommodate all those activities in the first 3 quarters of the financial year, Chair, with the view to then achieving the actual rezoning, if not sooner, but in the last quarter. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Chair, just in respect of the point that was raised by Honorable Masheko, I think Lucian's raised the point, but I know that what we have done as the HDA is that there is a project readiness committee that sits, because one of the problems that the HDA suffered in the past was that when he contracted for work from a province or a municipality, there was not proper feasibility or analysis done of the project readiness. So what would happen is that the HDA would accept the work, it would start the implementation, and then find a whole lot of matters that still need to be attended, EIAs, planning, all of those things. So now that's done up front, so those issues are attended. In relation to the title deeds to be transferred, that's specifically related to title deeds that will be registered and handed out, and we can confirm that part of that is where all of the necessary township establishment has been completed, so the registration or the envisaged registration can take place, and it's in the document to be measured upon. On the issue around the question of the vacancy rate, and I just to reiterate the point raised, one of the points that the HDA does rely on, and this is an issue that we are taking with the department, is that on an annual basis, there are certain contracts and capital grants funding that it receives from our province. On the basis of that, it then determines what it can or the number of people and the expertise that is required. In the medium to long term, that process will be replaced by the fact that because the HDA then has funding on its own, it has its own projects that it implements, and it has its own funding streams, it will then ensure that the HDA is able to not only rely on MTOP or the medium-term operational expenditure funding as well as revenue. Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if I've covered everything. I hope we've done that, but if there are any, it's not because we're not dealing with it. Chair, I can also confirm that the PIA request has been attended to and the information has been provided. I'll follow up with the ministry, but I'll also then have the DG forward that to yourself as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cheney. DG? Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to talk to you about this.
Yeah?
Yes, I'm going to talk to you
about this. Okay. DG, on the Mashiro's out of order, proceed.
Chairperson, I thought all the questions that were directed to the two entities were covered. Safe to say the matter on the appointment of the boards, I think I addressed it, but perhaps what you are looking for is maybe the timelines, and I think only the minister will be able to answer that question, but we've done everything that was needed. And at this stage, the HDA is the administrator. The HDA is responsible for all the oversight issues, and the acting CEO is responsible for the executive programs. And the department provides oversight as well. We think that HDA is stable, and the administrator is doing a good job there with his team, and we're providing support to the administrator. One of the things that we really have to work towards is capitalizing the HDA as an entity, because HDA was never capitalized. You had the CFO in the morning committing to making sure that we capitalize HDA, because HDA has no capital budget of its own. it's relying entirely on municipalities and provinces for the capital budget. And there's more work that is required from the SDA. I mean, a good example is a week ago we heard that the Elling racecourse in Port Elizabeth was sold in an auction for an amount of about 16 million rands. And the owners of that property wanted to sell that property to government a while ago, and HDA, if HDA had a budget of its own, a capital budget of its own, they would have purchased that piece of land because it's well located in Port Elizabeth, in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. But it's always difficult for HDA to engage private landowners and private developers because HDA has no capital budget of its own. And the core mandate and the primary mandate of HDA is to assemble land for development. Now, you can't achieve that mandate without a capital budget. So we're working on this part because we think that it will go a long way in assisting HDA to execute its mandate. The timing is perfect because we're starting the UNTEC processes in June, and they will come in 18 to the the main combat in November and the budget adjustment. So we're preparing for the next budget cycle, and this matter is a matter that the CFO of the department will be driving, supported by the minister and myself. Chairperson, at this stage, I don't think there is any other question. NHBRC is relatively stable. I think the chairman of NHBRC is providing leadership to the team, and I think the chairman is well experienced in the sector. She has been in the sector for more than 20 years, and she understands the business of NHBRC. In fact, she understands the business of human settlements in general. So we're not worried that NHBRC is stable. The only thing that we need to do is to make sure that we prepare ourselves for the next board, because this board tenure is coming to an end in June. I don't know, Chairperson, if there's any other question that I've left out, but I think at this stage we have addressed all the questions that were directed to us.
Let me check with members if there is any other follow-up question that they want to raise with yourselves. I don't see any hands meant that members Honourable Powell.
It's just a point of clarity. It's not a question, Chairperson. Mr. Poyer said the information was forwarded to me on the 9th. It has not reached me. So can I please urgently get clarity from Mr. Poyer, and I'm happy to have this discussion offline and not to waste everybody's time, but can I please urgently get clarity either via telephone or via email address as to where that information is, because there are legal implications in play at current. Thank you, Chairperson.
Acting CEO, can you repeat your answer?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I said we as the HDA have submitted the information to the ministry and to the national department on the 9th. And I think that Minister has also said we will follow up as to what has happened with that information. And we will then get back to the Honourable Member once we know what has happened, Chair. She must give us maybe a day or two, and we will definitely make sure that the information gets to her. That's what we said. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. I wanted you to clarify that from yourself, Acting CEO. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I don't see any other hands. Honourable Powell, your hands are still up.
Okay, I can see the hand is gone. Thank you very much, DG, DM. Do you have anything, DM, as we before we close? We have lost her. DM Chete.
I just updated her, Jefferson. She just joined, Jefferson. You can repeat your question.
Oh, DM Chete, we are about to close. We wanted to check if there's anything that you wanted to add from your team before we close. Probably the network problem, but I can close the meeting with the view that members of the portfolio committee they've received their answers, all of them, and there is no follow up question. And I want to take this opportunity to thank honourable members, DM and the team from Human Settlement led by the DG, the chair of NHBRC, for the good job that you are doing, ma'am, and we want to appreciate that, and we wish you well. If you are not coming back, you have done your best, and we've seen the performance of NHBRC, and again to say condolences to the department and your entity on the loss of your CEO, Mr. Glavant. I'm not sure that I pronounce it properly, but we want to appreciate the good work that he has done, even in assisting Department of Water and Sanitation in fixing their financial statements, and they got unqualified, and we owe that to him. And thank you very much, and to the new acting CEO, we wish you well in your job, and the new CFO, and you have our support in making sure that we do the good for our people. And thank you very much, everybody. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.